Shares of TSMC soared 12 NT at their highest point on Monday, eventually closing at 783 NT. The strong showing comes ahead of a company earnings conference on April 18th and investor confidence in AI orders.
TSMC has said its full year revenue will not be affected by the April 3rd earthquake. Since the earthquake struck, it's made fast progress in resuming operations.
地震的一个影响，就台积电的说法，看起来影响并不太大。
It looks like the earthquake will have a minimal impact on TSMC. Initial reports on Wednesday suggested a $60 million operational loss, but now it looks like the amount will be smaller. What the market is focusing on is TSMC's progress in advanced manufacturing processes, as well as its progress in packaging. It's also looking at news about future construction.
On Monday, TSMC announced plans to build a third fab in Phoenix, Arizona. It said the Biden administration agreed to provide direct funding of up to $6.6 billion, or roughly 212 billion NT. This new investment will bring TSMC's total capital expenditure in Phoenix to over $65 billion. This will make the site the largest foreign direct investment in Arizona history and the single largest greenfield foreign investment in U.S. history. A new service center in Hualien is offering help to people left homeless after the April 3rd earthquake. Launched on Monday, the center helps victims apply for rental subsidies and other relief funds. But problems were already apparent on the first day of operations.
One local found herself ineligible because her household registration did not match her actual home address. Another could not file a claim because he had no proof of a residency. County officials have promised to make special arrangements for these cases to help victims get their lives back on track.
I haven't even had a chance to live in it and the house is already destroyed. That's a 3 to 4 million NT investment. Was it all for nothing?
This man, surnamed Huang, had yet to move into his newly purchased home before it was struck by an earthquake and deemed uninhabitable because he had never moved in. He's unable to provide proof of residency for his aid application.
With regard to this case, processing the application poses a challenge, but you should still fill out the application. Your special circumstances will be accommodated through a separate arrangement made with the central government's National Land Management Agency.
The county government promised special arrangements, but gave no indication of a timeline. Mr. Huang and his wife had planned to move into their new home in mid-April upon the end of their rental lease, but an earthquake struck before they could move in, forcing them to seek government subsidies.
Is this bad luck or what? Why is it that renters get so many subsidies but I get nothing as a homeowner?
On Monday, the Hualien County government launched an earthquake aid center to help victims access relief funds and rental subsidies. But grievances cropped up on the first day. One local, surnamed Zeng, found herself ineligible for aid because her household registration did not match her actual home address.
A lot of us have our household registration at a place where we don't live. Some of us have landlords that won't let us file for household registration at a rental unit. So we have fallen through the cracks. I can't apply for aid, but I have actually lived here for a long time. Disaster aid will prioritize actual residents over property owners. If you actually live at the damaged property, you are an actual resident and you are eligible for rental subsidies.
The county commissioner said residents of damaged homes would get priority in aid distribution. She said that anyone with questions could go to the news center for assistance. The April 3rd earthquake had rendered many Hualien homes unsafe. For many displaced locals, getting government subsidies could be a long and bumpy road.
Locals in Hualien are stepping up to help in the wake of the April 3rd earthquake. A fried chicken shop and hotel have donated fresh meals and snacks to a rescue crew at Taroko National Park.
A food truck is serving up free Thai cuisine to earthquake victims. Public donations are also pouring into government bank accounts set up to support disaster relief.
Staff of the Lakeshore Hotel carry in coffee and bentos for rescue crew at Taroko National Park. There's also fried chicken and snacks sent in by a local TKK fried chicken branch to thank rescuers for their hard work over the past few days.
We've also brought fruit and drinks. We wanted to offer some support for the disaster relief effort. They are working really hard, so we treated them to some fried chicken, that's all.
Over in Hualien City, a food truck is serving up free Thai cuisine to disaster victims. It's just one instance of an outpouring of kindness in Hualien. According to organic food retailer Li Jing, its truck driver Chen Jianchen was mid-delivery at Daqing Shui Tunnel when the April 3rd earthquake struck. Rocks came crashing down on the road, killing the driver behind him and trapping more than 20 vehicles on the road. Chen quickly covered up the deceased driver with a black umbrella. Then, after getting permission from his company, he gave away food he was delivering, items such as herbal jelly and peanut soups, to other people stranded on the road.
We said it was okay, just open up the truck doors and give out what people need.
Although the store manager told Chen to take time off to rest, he insisted on continuing his daily deliveries to minimize the losses of local farmers.
We told him there was no need to work so hard. We told him to just go on the next trip, but he said no, we can't let the organic produce rot in the fields.
In the wake of the earthquake, Taiwanese society is stepping up to help victims. The Hualien County government says it's received 161 million NT in donations. Another 290 million NT have been donated to the disaster relief account created by the central government.
Former President Ma Ying-jeou has arrived in Beijing, the final stop of his China tour. It's also the most closely watched. Sources say he was scheduled to meet with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in Beijing on Monday, but that the encounter was postponed to Wednesday to coincide with a U.S.-Japan summit in Washington.
The DPP says Ma is walking into a trap set by China's United Front campaign.
Ma lacks his own independent thought, his own sense of self. He is fully complying with China's United Front campaign. China's intentions are as clear as day and apparent to all. Ma Ying-jeou is serving as the perfect pawn, the best supporting actor. At a time when China is facing political and economic isolation, Ma is giving a glow-up to Xi Jinping's image. This could lead the world to thinking that Taiwan is breaking from the US and Japan's democratic alliance and aligning itself with China's authoritarian regime. We are continuing to monitor former President Ma Ying-jeou's, that is, Mr. Ma Ying-jeou's activities in China. I am not in the position to comment on anyone's personal actions. It would appear that Ma is visiting China in personal capacity.
The Mainland Affairs Council said it was closely monitoring Ma's trip, which carried strong anti-US, anti-Japan, and unificationist overtones. It said that Ma's compliance with his host's arrangements threatened to mislead the global community about where Taiwan stands. To mark the 10th anniversary of the Sunflower Movement this year, the Economic Democracy Union put together 318 stories from the protests.
Rompo hoster Ai Yong was inspired to found an organization dedicated to urban poverty after distributing extra food from the protesters to the homeless. Another said that at the time, they climbed over real walls, but hopefully their stories can help others overcome mental barriers.
It's been 10 years since the Sunflower Movement, so where is everyone now? Aside from the leaders who have remained in the public eye, there's also Ah Young, founder of Do You a Flavor, who was inspired to create the NGO for the homeless from her experience during the protests.
Volunteers distributing supplies came to me and said they received another box late at night. My colleagues and I took out our phones to search for two words, and that set us on a path for the next 10 years. Those were the keywords, Taipei and homeless. That was the first time in my life I encountered people so unlike myself.
At that time, lots of food was donated to the protesters. To avoid waste, Ah Young donated it to the homeless, changing her life with a single box. The Economic Democracy Union put together 318 of these kinds of stories to cast new light on the Sunflower Movement. At the time, people not just in Taiwan but around the world demonstrated in solidarity with the protesters.
When the students were beaten, we thought, how is this okay? Then student groups around the world popped up. Since the US was on board, in Japan, Europe, at all times, there were Taiwanese people marching against the trade services agreement. At the time, we climbed over physical walls to get inside. Of course, many young people jumped on board right away, but the most important thing is that, in the process, they overcame mental barriers as well. Starting from the state of politics and democracy, they also thought about lots of other things in Taiwan, like trade, the free economy, and the economic system.
10 years ago, protesters burst through the walls of the legislature. Now, the students and protesters from that time hope that their stories will inspire others to turn to the next chapter.
The Taipei MRT's Yellow Line is still partially shut down due to the damage from the April 3rd earthquake. The disruption led to transport chaos Monday morning along the closed section between Zhonghe and Banqiao.
Shuttle buses were arranged to take commuters between the stations, but demand far exceeded capacity. New Taipei Mayor Hou Youyi visited Banqiao Station and promised more shuttle buses to ease transit.
Early Monday morning, workers and students wait at a bus stop outside Zhonghe Station on the MRT's Yellow Line. But all the shuttle buses that arrive are packed, and there isn't enough room for everyone. A student heading to class had to wait for three buses before being let on.
Here at Zhonghe Station, a sign indicates that the free shuttle buses stop here, but it doesn't say whether they are bound for Xingdian or Banqiao. Some passengers say they boarded the shuttles in the wrong direction and had to get off and rush to the correct location. They should have a sign on the door. It's only after I got on the bus that I realized I had to wait here instead.
The April 3rd earthquake displaced several sections of the elevated track on the Yellow Line. The metro company is expediting repairs, with plans to resume service in three stages. Service between New Taipei Industrial Park Station and Banqiao Station restarted on the day of the earthquake. Last Sunday, service between Dapingling Station and Zhonghe Station resumed. But there is still no rail connection between Zhonghe Station and Banqiao Station. The city government arranged for 17 free shuttle buses to connect the two stations. On Monday, the first workday of the free service, the number of passengers far exceeded expectations. Long lines formed at Zhonghe as well as Banqiao.
The earthquake damaged the Yellow Line. You can't ride it now, so we have to wait for a shuttle instead. I've been here for more than an hour.
Long lines persisted at Banqiao Station even after 9 a.m. New Taipei Mayor Hou Youyi stopped by the station for an inspection. During his visit, a woman with luggage in tow fell to the ground, presumably due to the long wait time.
The shuttle service between Zhonghe and Banqiao went through the morning rush hour today. The first issue is that people aren't used to these arrangements, and the second is that we do not have enough shuttle buses.
Following a review, the city government decided to dispatch an additional 60 shuttle buses in the afternoon, for a total of 33. It says it hopes the arrangement will meet demand during the evening rush hour.
The Dajia Mazun pilgrimage is in full swing, and the April 3rd earthquake is on the minds of many participants. A student at Hualien's National Donghua University has joined the procession, carrying a QR code for earthquake donations on her backpack.
Turkish influencer Uğur Rıfat Karlova was seen marching in Yunlin, waving a Taiwan flag and saying a blessing for Hualien.
Shi Luo Bridge is packed with worshippers hoping to see the Dajia Matsu on her palanquin. Staff urge the crowd to make way, and a path slowly forms for the procession. The convoy ended this leg of the journey at Fuxing Temple after traveling along Yenping Old Street. According to an AI-assisted estimate by the local temple, up to 800,000 people were in Xiluo on Sunday to welcome Matsu.
Perhaps because it's the Tomb Sweeping Festival long weekend, there are a lot of people. We don't have enough snacks prepared for such a big crowd.
Pilgrims wander on the streets and rest by the roadside. Some stop to scan a QR code strapped to a backpack.
Okay, nice.
Carried by a college student, the code connects to a fundraiser for Hualien's National Donghua University. The earthquake had destroyed a school lab and damaged student dorms. The fundraiser aims to help with reconstruction.
I hope that this will help the school rebuild some of its facilities.
A Taiwan flag is spotted in the procession. It's carried by Uğur Rifat Karlova, a Turkish influencer in Taiwan. Last week, Turkish rescue workers arrived to support relief efforts in Hualien. Karlova said the crew's arrival testified to the close friendship between Turkey and Taiwan.
And it so happens that a Turkish rescue team is here in Taiwan now. It kind of symbolizes the friendship between Taiwan and Turkey.
Karlova said it's his 13th year participating in the Dajia Matsu pilgrimage. He said this year's march is especially meaningful and that he's asking Matsu to protect Taiwan. As of Monday morning, the procession had passed Tuku Township in Yunling and is on its way to Jiayi.
And now, some good news from the world of gymnastics. High bar specialist Tang Jiahong won gold over the weekend at the FIG Dobro World Cup in Croatia.
Tang performed an exceptionally challenging routine with a difficulty score of 6.5. Tang shared his joy on Facebook, writing that his score was a personal best. During the tournament's qualifiers, he performed a routine with a difficulty score of 6.3 for a total score of 15.1. In the finals, he raised the stakes with a difficulty rating of 6.5 for a total score of 15.35. Tang qualified for the Olympics earlier this year but continues to compete as part of his training regimen for Paris. Following in her brother's footsteps, Lai Yijin's path has led her to represent Team Taiwan at the Asian Rowing Junior Championships.
Lai constantly challenges herself to do better, overcoming the lows to nurture a love for rowing that has won her a gold and silver at the regional competition.
Lai Yijin on Taiwan's team for the Asian Rowing Junior Championships is a second-generation immigrant from Cambodia. Now a freshman studying sport promotion at National Taiwan Sport University, she can trace her love for rowing back to middle school.
Since I played dodgeball back in elementary school, I craved that feeling of connection. Instead of just studying, I wanted to play sports as well. Maybe because I was a bit chubby as a kid, my brother said I was well suited to rowing.
The Dongshan Riverside in Yilan is where most Western-style rowers practice in Taiwan. It was here that Luo Donghai graduates Lai and her partner Huang Xinyi developed their fighting spirit.
I'm a bit faster than her, so I'll slow down a bit and she'll speed up. My rhythm is better, but she uses more power, so we complement each other.
In Huang's eyes, Lai is a once-in-a-lifetime teammate. Partnering with her gives a sense of security, not to mention results.
She has the willpower. Every time we take to the water, she'll bring our energy up. And it's so easy to row with her. Like, after we're done, we'll have a chat about what didn't go as well so we can get better.
Lai and Huang both participated in the Asian Junior Championships, winning a gold medal in 2022 and a silver in 2023. In the future, Lai plans to promote sports in her community. But of course, she hasn't given up her competitive edge.
I compete part-time. I hope that in the future, I can row while working. I don't want to leave it behind.
There's a saying that the key to succession isn't innate talent, but a combination of passion and perseverance. If Lai's fervour for rowing is any indication, she will see success for many years to come.
A decade at the Whetstone led sword dancer Tito Tsai to second place in Europe's largest talent competition last year.
His performance featured a 3-meter-long, 12-kilogram flaming sword deftly handled with gentle artistry.
After returning to Taiwan, Tsai shared the source of his persistence in an exclusive interview with FTV. Let's take a look.
Each hand grips two swords as another twirls over his shoulders. He then trades them for a pair of flaming blades. For the French edition of the Got Talent TV series, Titus Tsai was as perfect as they come. Tsai's back bears all 12 kilograms of the 3-meter-long flaming sword. Sharing the stage with his wife, Li Ziyi, the two earned a standing ovation from the judges and audience of La France A1 and Incroyable Talent, winning second place.
There was a lot to be done before France's Got Talent, because I only had a little over 10 days to prepare. I knew I wanted to create something with a really special Eastern flair. I added four drums to the background to represent Taiwan's religious processions.
The choreography, staging, and music are all original creations. While withstanding the heat of the flames, Tsai's performance features a striking combination of acrobatics, martial arts, circus, and modern dance.
My team and I created this performance during the preparation period, which only exists in Taiwan. If my mum hadn't encouraged and supported me so much while growing up, and if my wife weren't part of my team, I couldn't have made it this far.
Tsai began sword dancing when he was 19. Even though he once had to go to the hospital after a sword fell on his foot, Tsai said he is just as determined to promote the art.
No matter if it's sword dancing or fire dancing, the main point isn't that it's dangerous or scary. The idea is to present a different kind of beauty.
Tsai vows to keep creating new performances and opportunities to show Taiwan to the world.